who would have a hobby that's like not really like useful and like practical, but spend a lot of money on it?
Yikes. Not me. Couldn't be me, brother.
Save all of this for the recording that counts.
You can just drop that later.
Yeah, no, no. I'll put a special note at about 120. 120.
A great little joke about
and here's where we caught him with a hot mic. I have a watch. This billionaire.
This out of touch poet.
Listen, you know, my friend's Amico, like friend, touch. But is he your friend?
Yeah. Friend to who?
Friend.
The billionaires on friend Wall Street?
The wealthy fat cats.
Friend in italics.
Is brought to you by the committee to elect billionaires.
Friend in Italian.
And
italics and Italian.
There you go.
Should we start at some point?
At some point.
Where we're just in the middle of.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Social Contract, a Commander podcast. I'm Mike Almond, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Alex Lapp. Alex! What's up, man?
Well, Mike, not too much, although we do have a very special guest.
Oh.
Our good friend, Brandon Amico, who is a writer, and we have him on the show to talk about a article he wrote recently about playing games at the table, but not just EDH games.
Yeah, and currently Brandon is practicing what we discussed before of staying completely silent.
Okay, we did not tell him to stay silent.
No, he just went a little bit too far with it. Brandon, hi.
Hello.
Welcome. Commander's Herald. Brandon, how are you, bud?
Mike, Alex, I'm great. Thank you for having me on. I was trying to find like a good on-ramp. There were like little pauses
there.
I wasn't sure. I didn't want to insert myself in there. I was practicing. You know, I'm a poet in my quote unquote free time, and I was practicing what we discuss is like verbal white space. You know, playing with the full page.
Okay,
so, just blazing new trails. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I like it. It makes it a little bit difficult for me to edit the complete silence at sometimes because now it's on purpose.
Well, the silence has different
actually,
qualities
I guess,
to it, so I need you to really
identify.
He knows
why Cage Bird doesn't sing.
So, Brandon, the way that we've had some guests on here before, and I think the kind of way that we'd like to, you know, cede the floor to you is, you know, tell us a little bit about your journey through Magic. You know, when did you get started? What do you like to play typically? Like, big overview. And then, you know, a little bit of the stuff that you do with Magic and stuff that you do outside of Magic. You've already mentioned a poet, so I'm very excited to hear more about that. But give me the Brandon, like, Twitter bio at the same time. It's kind of like, hey, what you got? You got like 280 words.
Yeah, it's a little longer. Anyway, my name is Brandon Amico, as you said, and I've been playing Magic since 2001, so longer than some people at my LGS have been alive, which makes me, my back hurts just saying that. I need my pills.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
But Odyssey was my first set, the Odyssey block and the Onslaught block.
Nice.
I was playing back when Type 2 was a thing, and they switched it to now being called Standard. And I played for a few years, and then, you know, like everyone, I kind of, you know, went to college, found my own way, and Magic was part of that for a while. But I always had a soft spot for it. And then back in 2018, when my stepson was playing Pokemon and had me play it with him, I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. Now, do you want to try this slightly better? Like, you know, a little bit that you'll want to play beyond elementary school because, you know, I don't know if it's like in different year, but like you can't play Pokemon in high school.
Pokemon's for babies, son.
Yeah, that's kind of the vibe. I don't know if it's changed at all. Kids are different. But I showed him Magic and we both got back into it. And even though now he's in high school and doesn't play Magic either, I still kept up with it and have been playing since 2018 regularly. And it's been a lot of fun. And I definitely, at my heart, I'm a 60 card 1v1 player. But Commander has grown so much, and there's so much there that it's impossible to not play Commander if you're playing Magic. Or if you do, you are missing out. I do think there are different sides of the same really valuable coin. And But as a result, I like efficient, streamlined, and often aggressive decks and playstyles. Like when I got back into Magic, mono red in Standard, back with Chandra and Bomat Courier and those type of things, was just it was a blast, and some of my favorite decks. So I definitely tend to build creature heavy aggressive decks, which don't always scale super well to Commander, so it's been a journey for me to figure out how to do that, but I also am someone who likes to try different things and challenge myself to play decks that are outside of my comfort zone. So that's been my journey through Commander, and I started writing for Commander's Herald recently. Knowing that I do poetry, as you said, and I have been doing that for, gosh, over a dozen years. I've been publishing and have a book and a National Endowment for the Arts Creative Writing Fellowship and a few other accolades. So I definitely, you know, if you're in the poetry world, in the literary world, like, I'm not a big name, but you probably see my name around, which, you know. It feels really good. It feels really good because you put that much work into it. But I always love writing, and I like writing about things I'm passionate about. And becoming passionate about Magic again after that long break, and now bringing this like writing ability that I'd honed over the years, Jason Ault brought me on to, you know, very very kindly, someone with no Magic writing experience brought me on here and was like, here, you have a fun deck, fun column idea, go for it. So I started the column Flavor of the Month. Flavor Town was already taken, so by Jubilee, so I went with that. But it's kind of a column that it's a deck building column that starts with flavor, and originally that was flavor text. So like I found like Togo was a character that didn't exist for a while. He was just in flavor text about this like great goblin genius like weaponsmith, but he was just like discovering rocks and lightning. That those were his discoveries.
And they eventually
made a card out of him. So I took all the cards that like mentioned Togo and kind of the vibe of them, and then built a deck out of there. And it's kind of evolved into not just flavor text, but also like any like the general flavor of a thing. Like I did one that was around like the idea of I should say I took real world flavor text like Shakespeare quotes and made a deck out of them. I took one
Older ones,
Edgar Allan Poe as well. I did a Grilled Ramps with Chandra and Nissa. I used to name these after dishes, and then like kind of the Chandra and Nissa got back together in the lore, so we built like a flavorful like basically a partner deck with the two of them. We kind of rolled zeroed that.
I believe they never made those two partner.
Yeah, that's a shame. Maybe we'll get there. Actually, I believe I made it a teamer deck, so I could put them both in it, and it became like an elemental thing because it was kind of an overlap that they had. But it's fun because that process of discovering how to do it is really fun, and they might not be the most efficient decks because, you know, we can all run Smothering Tithe and Vandal Blast and 16 mana rocks and get very efficient decks, but it won't make for good articles. It won't make for interesting deck building, and the deck building for me is almost as fun, if not more fun, than the actual playing. I know some folks are like that too. What about you guys? Mike and Alex, you more builders or players?
Ooh,
that's a good question. I thoroughly enjoy both, but I when I get the opportunity and the, you know, the muse strikes to build, that always feels good. So I can definitely appreciate your branching out into that direction.
Yeah.
I'm gonna kind of skirt the line here. I think I'm more of the play the game person than the builder, but mostly I want to play the game, and kind of what it seems like you've got a theme with at the same time here. My plan is to play the game, but then play the mini game inside of the game. Like I don't want to. I could win. That'd be fun. But I'd rather make everybody vote 35 times this game.
That's an excellent segue, because this is the nature of our podcast, right? We like to win, but we love to play, and we love these deck archetypes: group hugs, stacks, chaos, voting, politics, types of decks that encourage players to play differently, make choices at the table, cards that create games within the game. Mm-hmm. And incidentally, our guest has written something to that effect. Would you like to tell us about your new article?
Yeah. So a very recent article on came out December 30th. So I'm not sure when you're listening to this. You might be listening to this in 2037. So it came out December 30th of 2023, just for record keeping. I call it Riddle Me This. I built the idea around, I was looking for like riddles in flavor text. That's usually where I start with these articles. I'll see like, oh, I remember there being multiple cards where it's like, here's a little riddle. And the answer usually is the card or the name of the card or what the card
is. The answer is always time.
What happened as I built it was there wasn't a lot of meat there. There were a couple interesting riddle cards like that had riddles on them, but they really didn't work together or they weren't interesting cards. But I realized as I went through that there were a bunch of sphinxes, because sphinxes in mythology and popular culture, they give you riddles. That's how you pass them. You don't have to fight them. You don't have a key. You answer a riddle. And so that kind of got me going a little bit. And sphinxes also dovetail with kind of what you were leading into there, these little mini games. That's the term I use for a card that makes, like, basically puts the game on pause and says two people or more are going to interact in an interesting way. Like you talked about, voting is one. There's a new card from Murders at Karlov Manor that is Prisoner's Dilemma, where everyone can vote to be silent, and then there's a small pain for everyone. But if...
Don't worry, listeners. We will get that set review to you, and we will talk about Prisoner's Dilemma.
I take your word for it.
Actually, I wrote the for Commander's Herald the set review for Red. So I have some thoughts on that as well.
Excellent.
But it's a cool thing because it's like a social dynamic there. Like if everyone trusts everyone and everyone picks silence, everyone only takes 4 damage. But if I pick silence and you betray me and you snitch, I take, 12, I think, or 8 or something.
Ooh.
And you get nothing. So you can betray me, but if we all pick betray, it's bad. So it's really fascinating.
Huh.
But a lot of the ones that I use for this deck, so I built it with a kind of a Sphinx build. There's Yennet as the commander, and she has kind of a game there too. Is it odd or is it not off the top? For those, Yennet, Cryptic Sovereign, for those who don't know, is a big sphinx that when it attacks, you reveal the top card of your library. If it's an odd mana cost, you can cast it for free. If it's not, you put it in your hand. And so a lot of these minigame cards are kind of like Fact or Fiction was one of the original ones, right? It's like, hey, Alex, I'm going to have you put the top 5 cards in my library in 2 piles. I get one and the other one goes to the graveyard. So like you're having to choose what you think my game plan will be and try to like split the thing. You don't want to put all the good things in one pile because I'll take that. You know, it's an interesting thing, but also in multiplayer games, there's a political part of it. It can be, Alex, Mike is really going off here. I need to find some answers. You need to give me the good stuff in here. Can we work together on this?
I'll give you the good stuff. Yeah, pile cards are interesting. I have certainly grown weary after seeing so many of them, and many of them do not introduce a new facet that makes the pile arrangement novel or interesting in a way that previous ones weren't, which makes sense. There's only so many things you can do with piles.
Yes.
But if they're going in that direction, I wish they would, you know, generate something new each time.
Yeah, there are some. So I found in the process of writing this, I found a few interesting ones. Atris I knew about, which is a simpler one, but is one of my favorites. It's 3 cards, but one pile is face up and one pile is face down.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like a great thing. Like I can put a good thing in the open and the face up one. So you think, oh, what's under the bottom one must be even better. And there's crap under there maybe.
Or is it a bluff?
It's a bluff.
Or is it a double bluff?
Opportunity for bluffing.
Exactly.
It's the Battle of Wits scene from Princess Bride. I know you thought that think that. And there's some other ones in here. Another good one is Master of Predicaments. It's a sphinx that when it hits a player, you choose a card in your hand, and the player that got hit says either its mana cost is greater than 4 or 4 or less. And if they guess wrong, you cast it for free. So do you go for like a huge free spell, or they think you're not going to try to get away with that. Like, I'll go for the low one. So,
well, combine that with the idea of doing the piles and like, oh, well, people know that I have at least this in my hand. So am I going with that? Am I going with something different? Who knows?
Exactly. Whoa. And I just love stuff like that. So this type of deck was a way to bring, if you build this deck or something close to it, you will interact with the people at your table differently than a normal game. You know, there's interaction, there's kill spells, there's board wipes, there's counter spells. The varying depending on how many you run in your pod or the type of play style, but everyone kind of, I want to get away from games that feel like four people playing solitaire next to each other. And it's everyone building their doomsday machine, and whoever built it fastest wins. I want to do a little more.
I like that. Yeah, I figured out my biggest problem that I've had building decks is the amount of targeted removal slash, you know, interaction with other people's boards. I'll almost throw it away on purpose because it just, well, I don't want to ruin their fun. Like I want them to do their thing. I want to do my thing. It's like, well, that turns into a little bit of solitaire, and I also have a tendency example. Somebody was playing the Joyra historic commander, where whenever you play a historic spell, you can draw a card and stuff. And they told us at the table, it's like, I've got a really cool way to win with this deck. It won't win, but if it wins, it'll win in a really cool way. And I was like, all right.
That sounds good.
So the amount of times, I was like, okay, I'm down. So the amount of times that I could have stopped them and I could have done something to like quit their engine of like reducing artifact costs and playing stuff. And I'm like, I'm very excited to see this. And, you know, is it an Aether Flux Reservoir? And he's like, well, that's in here, but I'm not going to win with that. I'm like, okay. And then they just kept going and they just kept going and they just kept going and they just kept going. And then the last game, the last turn after they went through their deck, they're like, all right, Lab Maniac. I'm like, wait a second. That's on me for not asking, but hold on a second. I feel duped.
Well,
this isn't a cool, interesting way. This is literally what the...
Well, here's a question, Mike. Was it a newer player? Like, was it someone who...
No.
Who doesn't, like, hasn't seen that before? Because that is cool the first time to do it.
Exactly. And that's kind of what I was thinking. It was like, all right, I feel duped because I see Lab Man and I'm like, oh, a Lab Man win. Okay. Whereas, like, maybe they've seen Lab Man win a whole bunch of times and they've never done it themselves, or they've never seen it. I don't know. But, and that's where it kind of gets into, where it's like, you know, we talk a lot about being very upfront with, like, this is what my deck does. This is how my deck is going to try to win. This is typically when my deck is going to win if I do so. And the idea of going to a table and saying, all right, this is my deck. It's all about riddles. It's all about piles. It's all about, is it this or is it this? Mm-hmm. And basically playing the guessing game, let's make a deal kind of, all right, which one do you want? Is a very cool, like, concept of an overall, like, no, the table is going to be involved and we're going to do some stuff. That's very neat.
Yeah, I want people to play. Like, I'm playing with three other people because I want to play with them. I want to interact with them, and maybe, as you said, I don't want to mess up their engine if they're having a good time. Like, no one wants to sit at a table and have a two-hour game that they cast five spells on. We've all been there. It happens. But, you know, we don't want to force that on people. But if we can get them to, like, you know, the more I can create interesting interactions or unusual interactions, I know Michael Solani, who's been on this podcast, makes just the wildest decks. And like, those seem like so much fun. Like you don't have those interactions normally. And for a format with, how many cards is it now? 30,000 or something like that?
It's almost 30,000. Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Like, there's so much you can do.
Yeah. As far as, like, When it's the study of, like, oh, Magic is the most complicated game because the amount of different combinations of everything that you can do, can interact with, especially if you install another three players and you basically said all of your limit is every card in history and you have a commander and, oh, by the way, you can't play, like, these 17 cards or whatever it is. Like, it just turns into a, okay, cool. So do we really want to do the thing where it's like, all right, great, here are the automatic 10 cards that we include because I'm playing a deck that's white. Here are the automatic, you know, 15 mana rocks or whatever, like you were saying before. The idea of, hey, I want to play decks that are, like, doing a fun thing, whether it's, oh, the synergy of, I like the counters, I like to move the dice and look at this. This is a 35-35 that was born as a 2-2. Stuff like that. That's cool. I get it. But the idea of taking those cards with all those options and then doing something as, frankly, you've got a whole bunch of creatures in this deck that you've made and a whole lot of heavy mana cost stuff, which is just, it just, my heart is singing. I am all battle cruiser all the time. I want people to do insane stuff, and I would rather be, I would rather lose to a deck that's like, here are 13 Sphinxes and a whole lot of like seven mana cost things that I played because Factor Fiction exists and it's very cool, versus like, aha, here's my combo that you've seen a thousand times.
Yeah.
It's a really cool mini game to play into it.
It is. And I mean, Yennet kind of gets around the, for this example, kind of gets around the heavy, like sevens and nines are going to be hard to cast, but if you're getting them for zero mana off your five mana command, right, pretty good. But no, yeah, I agree. Yeah. And this
six is
no good unless it's Consecrated Sphinx, which, by the way,
exactly,
side note, why does Consecrated Sphinx draw you two cards every time? It would be broken with one card every time your opponents draw a card. Do you really need double all of your opponent's cards together? Like, that, it's just nuts. But
I honestly think the entire reason for it is to tempt people into drawing and then do like the, oh, I've got three cards left in my library. And you just draw it, you just drew a card. I really want to draw two more, but that, oh, I'd be very close. I think it's just to make the math a little bit weird, to be completely honest.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, this deck, like how often do you see Conundrum Sphinx in a deck? Like,
it's, I don't.
Yeah, I've never seen it played. I didn't know it existed until I searched for this deck. And it's actually like, oh, that's pretty good if you're, you know, because if you're just scrying things to the top, which you want to do in this deck anyway, like, excuses to play cards that in very niche applications are very effective, that aren't generically good. It seems really
interesting. And referring to that Conundrum Sphinx real quick, because it's a card that, again, I hadn't seen until this article. Conundrum Sphinx is 2BB for a 4/4 flying Sphinx. So pretty good value on that. So what's the downside? When Conundrum Sphinx attacks, each player chooses a card name. Then each player reveals the top card of their library. If the card a player revealed has the name they chose, they put that card into their hand. If they don't, they put that card in the bottom of their library. Okay, so it's an opportunity for other people to draw cards, but you know what you're going to do. The deck is built around this kind of concept.
Yeah,
so the idea of like, here we go, more fun, let's continue. I really like that.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, I know you guys talk about group hug a lot on this podcast. It's almost that. It's not quite that, but it's giving more people to interact. Like, I don't want people to zone out, even when you have long turns. And I love an engine. I do like an aggressive deck.
But
I love an engine. The first deck I ever built was Tatiova. And not because it was popular at the time, it was because I was playing Standard when Dominaria came out, and I tried to play Tatiova, but she was too slow. And someone was like, well, you should get into Commander. And I was like, oh, because I love the idea of Tattoo Over where you have no dead draws. You're either getting a spell or a land that's going to get you to a spell. So it turned out to be perfect, and of course, very overpowered because Tattoo Over is. But
Civic value.
Yeah, but I love an engine, and I love value. I love to see, I love to take game actions. As a result, I tend to have some pretty long turns in my decks.
That's fair.
And I don't, like, you know, that happens sometimes, but the more I can get other people involved, the last thing I want is for people to zone out for 5 minutes because it's my turn, another turn. And ways to get around that are great.
Anytime you sit down at the LGS and you start your turn and somebody gets up to go, like, buy a soda or whatever, it's like, oh, no. Okay, that's fair.
But also, like, I don't know about you.
I'm prepared.
And this is an interesting social phenomenon. I don't know about you, but I'm realizing, like, when I play, I want people to know what I'm doing because I don't want them to, like, come back and be like, well, when did that happen? Or if they weren't paying attention,
right,
like, I played this little card. It was not a big deal for six turns, and now it's a big deal. I'm trying to, like, find the middle ground between playing in a speedy manner, because we have a lot to do here. We're four people playing a game. But also, like, make sure everyone knows what's going on the board. So I don't quite know the right answer there, but don't be on your phone at the table.
That's something that we heavily encourage. We heavily encourage our listeners to make sure that players are aware of what they're doing, and the specific manner by which we encourage that is to say what you're doing out loud and read the cards you're playing, because there are 27,000 cards. Nobody knows what they are. Mm-hmm. And that dovetails right into when you're going for that win, right? In addition to you know, you don't want to necessarily win in a boring way, as you were talking about earlier. You also don't want to win in a sneaky way where nobody even knew that the win was coming, or they didn't even know what that card did, or maybe they didn't even know it was on the board because there's 400 permanents on the board. We heavily recommend being forthright, saying out loud what you're doing, and tattling on yourself when you're going for the win.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, you could definitely make that a little clearer when you're going for the win. In my personal experience, it hasn't been quite as much as like, hey, I'm about to go for it this turn or something like that. But definitely when there's something in known information for players, I don't like hiding that. Certain decks, you know, you want to have the second piece of something, like, you know, that's going to go off. You don't want to telegraph it too much. But at the same time, like, you don't, I don't like being like, oh, well, you're dead to this thing that's been sitting there. Like, Divine Intervention is a card. I don't know if you know that one. It's a really old card that no one plays. It's from Legend.
Makes the game draw.
Yep. Yeah, Alex is laughing. He knows it. It's a 8-mana, I think, enchantment, and it comes in with 2 counters. In your upkeep, you remove a counter, and the second one's removed, the game ends in a draw. That's all it does. No one plays it.
Yep.
But
I think it's just about the only card that isn't part of a, you know, part of an infinite combo that you can't end, that actually draws the game as the result of the card resolving.
Yeah. The last thing I would want is to have the card on the board and then just like, people go to my turn and be like, well, the game's over now. You know, that's not fun for anyone.
You gotta tell yourself.
Yes, exactly. You make it clear if you play something like that. Like, this is what's happening. You all have 2 turns to deal with this.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. And like, that seems fun. That seems, well, more fun than the other way.
It's sporting behavior.
Yes, sporting behavior is fun. And the other thing I like, and, you know, it kind of fits into this as well, is we talked about, like, okay, you're the 10 cards you play because you're in this color, and your deck suddenly becomes you choosing 30 cards because you have lands and staples and mana and ramp and all that. Not a lot of room. I really like, even though we're constantly making our decks more efficient and more streamlined, and we play them and like, oh, this doesn't work as well, so I'll take it out and I'll put this thing that works better, and our decks become so straightforward and streamlined, I finding myself putting more things in that do bring an element of randomness, which is my favorite part of Magic.
Yeah,
something that is going to make games play differently. And I think that's why, even though I tend to skew a little bit more to our higher power EDH than probably the average person, I definitely like my powerful plays, my strong mana rocks and stuff like that. I don't go quite all the CEDH way because, from what I can tell, and I'm certainly not as experienced in it as people that play it on the regular, but it seems like that efficiency has streamlined into a couple ways to win, and I don't want my deck to perform the same every way. Every time I play it, I don't want to go for the same thing. I want to throw cards that work well together in a deck and try to solve the puzzle of, here are the cards you got, make it work.
Yeah. I've gotten to a point where I'll make decks and I'll know that version 1.0 is going to turn into version like 19.0 by the time that I'm actually like, okay, my deck is done. And a lot of that process is like, all right, take version 1.0, sit down at a table, play a game with people, and then I'll draw something that is good. And I'll just be like, eh, I don't want to do that, though. That's not going to be fun right now. You know, like, Psychrift has basically been removed from my inventory at this point just because it's a really powerful card and it should be played. And every time, I've never felt good playing it, you know, and that's not to say that people shouldn't play it. It's just that that's not my play style. I want to see as much weird stuff as I possibly can that also continues and forwards the game. I think there was a game that we streamed playing with DJ Jumbo Commander at one point, and I had a Revel in Riches out, and I had it up to like 8 treasures, but with onboard ability to make like 5 more.
To get past the 10.
Yeah, past the 10, and it was his turn, and then my turn was following, and he was sitting there. It's like, all right, I think I have to deal with that/you. And I was like, oh, is it just the worry that I'm going to win with it? Because I'm not going to. I don't want to do that. That's boring. Like, that's not that. I like the mana rock. If the reason that this card exists is because Black Market doesn't have a second version that says Black Market version 2. Yeah, that's what I use this for.
Right. Wouldn't we just have a Revelant Riches that doesn't make you win the game? That'd be so much better.
Right. So I basically just went, I'll tell you what, if you don't do the terrible thing that you're telling me you're going to do to me right now, I'll crack as many treasures as you want me to. And it's like, okay, get rid of five. And I was like, all right, here's five. Boom. That mana floats away. Sorry. Oh, no, I'm sad. Like, that's the kind of stuff where it's the, what are you putting into your decks and why are you putting in there? Is it just because, oh, this will get me to the win faster? Is this going to be able to stop somebody from winning? Or, you know, is this a weird Sphinx that I've never seen before that also says, hey, when this happens, at some point it's going to work for somebody else, not just me, you know? Like, yeah. Somebody is going to do a conundrum Sphinx and then be like, Forest, hey, cool, and be really pumped about it, and that's going
to
be awesome.
Or it's like, I really need my Swords to Plowshares to not die next turn.
Exactly. I was literally about to say, we have to get rid of that thing. Everybody, Swords, Path, Beast Within, whatever. If you've got it, say it.
Every 100 times, you're going to hit it, and it's going to feel awesome.
Yep. The moment where you Chaos Warp something, shuffle up the deck, and then you reveal said card that you Chaos Warp, and it's just, well,
yep,
here we are again. It's I've never felt bad when that's happened. It's always hilarious.
It is.
And there's no reason that this game shouldn't be hilarious.
Yeah, but I do think there's room for all sorts of, you know, and that's why I do like the identification of, like, different playstyles and different, like, CDH is his own thing. Like, no one there will get mad at you for playing literally anything, because if it's going to help your deck, you're doing it.
Right.
And, you know, that's the social contract. It's just, all CDH is a predetermined rule zero conversation. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
They all had that in beforehand. They came with the same understanding. So getting there is really important. And yeah, no, I do agree. And I like that people can find the ways, like, for some folks, like, you know, getting their commander removed is just ruins your day. And
yeah,
for some folks, it's like, well, that's, you know, it is at the end of the day, this is, you know, a game you're trying to win. Like, if you're going up,
yeah,
like, finding that balance, it is tricky. And I know, you know, a lot of, I mean, that's a lot of what this podcast is, right? Like, just trying to find the social nuances of making, you know, the time you spend with three other people, friends or strangers or soon to be friends, a little bit more enjoyable.
You made reference to our podcast a couple of times. Have you actually listened to us?
I mean, I've referenced them before. Mm. Like, so yeah, like,
yeah,
you know, is this, now hold on, Alex, are you implying that no one listens? Are you surprised that there's a listener?
Yes.
Did you invite me into a podcast that no one listens
to?
This is really just my opportunity to have a private conversation with Alex. The reason that he's able to help me out with as many judge questions, because I don't understand how the game is played, is because I tied it into, like, well, why don't we do, like, this cool podcast project? And then you,
like,
can,
sure,
keep answering my questions, and it won't
questions.
Be weird. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Are you an active judge?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. I was a level one judge for a little bit, and then the judge thing disappeared.
Yeah.
And I get nervous when telling modern players about this rule interaction that doesn't work the way they want, and having to figure out how to appropriately fix or punish people. Punish is the wrong word, but, like, resolve infractions or something.
Exactly.
Like that. And I dropped off.
That's
that
a really
fast.
Really nice way to say that. That's a really nice way to say punish. That was
infractions.
That was pretty quick thinking on your part.
Is the official term.
Yes. Exactly.
Right. I just had my moment of, like, wow, Brandon really is a writer. Look at this word.
And a marketer. I haven't even mentioned what I do for, like, a living. Like, I write content website copy, articles, social media for businesses, especially in the tech space. So,
okay.
So I definitely know some, like, euphemistic almost, like, level
job.
Of, like, obfuscating what you're
Ah, I see.
Your
level to synergize and react is very
hair
nice.
Stand on end.
What's that?
No, it's
well, he just started throwing in corporate buzzwords.
Oh, yes.
Yep. No.
Let me throw a word cloud your way.
What year is this?
No.
There's a disturbance in the force here. I get it. We're cool.
So if you don't mind, a quick detour here. Alex, like,
yeah,
how did you, because I did the judge programmer because I wanted to get more involved in that way, and even though I didn't want to then judge events myself, what I really liked was I loved how much of the, back when Judge Academy was a thing, I don't know what they're doing now. I know there still are judges, obviously. I don't know how it's being managed, but what really liked was, like, a full third of the judge training, at least for level one, was community building. It was, there's a third of it on rules, there's a third of it on tournament, what happens, like the tournament rules and competitive rules beyond, like, what happening in the game. And then there's a third on community building and building a welcoming space and helping your community and building it up. And that part really stuck with me. And that's how I wanted to engage with it. We actually did here in Asheville, North Carolina, through Gamers Haunt, which is one of my local stores. We did a little judge camp where we met every other Sunday for like 3 months. And we went through every lesson together. And we certified a couple more judges and we got people more invested and even just like knowing the rules and able to help out at, you know, they're like 60 person commander events. And, you know, a lot of these people haven't been playing for very long. So there are interactions that are missed out, but I really love that part of it. And I really hope that more people and more LGSs, more communities really take that more to heart. And by which I mean, get more people involved in that layer of that part of Magic. So I was me talking a lot, but Alex, how did you get into how did you get into the judging?
Sure. Well, in my relatively short tenure as a judge, although I guess it's been 7 years now, I've now,
it's not short,
lived in three different judge dynasties, as it were. The Judge Apps dynasty, the Judge Academy dynasty, and now the Judge Foundry dynasty. And I suppose what I've learned is that it's basically the same folks in these leadership positions, but as far as engagements and assistance from corporate Wizards of the Coast, it's just not there. And they've really hung them out to dry this time, but that's a story for another day, right? So I initially got into judging in 2017. I had just gotten back into the game. I initially started playing Magic in college, and that'd be Battle for Zendikar block, the Eldrazi, back in 2009, and didn't really engage with it. Got back into it around 2017, and it was at that time that I learned about the game of Commander. They had the precons on the shelves. Really started to get into it, and I'm just that kind of person who would become a judge, not in a good way, but in like a, I played when I played D&D, it was the DM and memorized 20,000 DM rules. D&D is a phenomenally complex game, but not nearly as such as Magic the Gathering.
No.
But being a judge has been...
Would people come to you asking for rulings and stuff
all the time
before that? Were you the guy?
Yeah, all the time. And that's basically the main way that I engage with being a judge to this day, and for a number of reasons, and not really to get into it, I don't feel very connected with the judge program or with other judges, and for personal reasons, I can't really go out and judge tournaments in the way that I used to, but
sure,
I do truly love the game and the rules of the game, but the thing that I love most is imparting the knowledge of these rules to players, particularly in a way that doesn't make them feel like idiots. Because again, as Mike said earlier, and as I'm sure everybody knows, this game has been scientifically proven to be the most complex game in the world. So there's really no shame in not knowing how two cards interact when there's millions and billions of interactions that those cards can have. But
yeah, I describe this game as a chess with thousands of different pieces.
Exactly. Each individual card and is layers, a rule. And in addition to that, there's about 1,000 to 2,000 actual rules beyond the cards themselves.
And also, the chessboard is now with four players and ways to get back your pieces that you didn't realize that you could get back,
etc. Answer your question, into judging because I wanted to learn the rules better and help teach the rules to people better. But as far as officiating my duties, I mean, really, that the way that I do that is fielding questions for people and helping people understand the rules. Really,
That's cool.
That's fair. I kind of want to tag along onto the, hey, so how does, Yeah, you do.
What was that?
I said
that
I also have an article I've read sometimes as a judge.
Oh. I don't think I've ever read
it. We're at a PBH rec.
And what kind of stuff? There you go. I know. I know. I've been here. Okay. That's when. Yeah. Brandon, I kind of like going into the, like, how does, you know, what motivated this? Why did this happen? So I've always had this kind of curiosity with somebody who has like an article series. And I don't think I've ever thought to actually ask the question. And I'm going to do it now because I don't know when I'm going to do it again. So you've been doing the flavor of the month since what, like May of last year, something like that?
That sounds right.
Maybe.
I'm looking now. May. Yeah, was the first one.
Okay. So here's my question. Do you start a series like that where it's like, oh, I'm going to do like a flavor of the month. I'm going to do kind of like a weird deck where it's based off of blank. Do you do that because you have a lot of ideas for weird decks or decks that are a little bit against the norm and, hey, it'd be really cool to like show these off? Or do you do it once because it would be a cool idea and then you basically get to like do a case study and what would be the next one and what's the next one and come up with how does the mentality work for something like that, I guess?
Well, when I spoke to Jason about getting, you know, doing some articles, I had a couple different ideas of columns, and this is the one that,
okay,
that he was he and Jake were most interested in.
And
I had a couple like things that we could do under this heading of flavor based decks, and certainly some that I was like, okay, I want to get my feet under me, I want to get you know, a little more comfortable, and then I want to tackle it. Like I did the Shakespeare and the Edgar Allan Poe ones. Those are ones I plan on doing from the start. Like, I love the old, that they used to do real world flavor texts on cards. I love that. And with only like one or two exceptions, they did like a secret lair. Like, they don't do that anymore. They want it to all be in world, which I get. That makes sense. But I waited a while to do those. And I don't have, like, I definitely keep ideas when an idea comes to mind. I write it down, but I find that when inspiration strikes, and I don't like the term inspiration so much because it makes it sound like to create you need to have it, because a lot of actual inspiration is building the processes of creating, of writing, of whatever your art is, and doing it so much that when an idea does come to you, you're ready to act on it. You have that,
right,
those muscle memory of like, okay, this is how I address it, this is how I build this idea, rather than
consistency of the process and being able to just immediately enact it when you want
exactly
to, as opposed to
exactly,
yeah, I get that.
And with this great pause here, because I'm
thinking, he's a great orator,
thoughtful. You can cut this part. We're another one of those moments.
Absolutely not. This is part of the process. Okay, I don't know what to tell you.
The process of me, because we talked about earlier, I have a bad, I say and ah a lot, but I should be quiet and pensive and make people think,
yes,
I'm a really deep thinker when I
you are a deep thinker. You're a poet with a grant from
federal government. Yeah. Your tax.
This man's the EDH poet in residence at Commander's Harem.
I guess that's true. Kind of by default.
Do they give
as
you
as I know there are no other poets to the here. Janitor? Yeah, I think I probably live like, well, I would probably be up in like the janitor's, like the racks behind the toilet paper rolls.
Oh wow, the penthouse.
Like that.
Oh.
I'd be sleeping up there. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a real cushy job.
Everyone else has to sleep on car batteries.
All right, cleaning supplies. Jesus. We've got the mop over here.
Mm-hmm. He was Brandon. Really proud of that cushy bed. I can tell.
I was. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Gosh, I lost my thread before, and then in the description.
I guess you could say my poetry is Cottonelle soft. Here's my money.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. All right.
Something about soft.
Sponsor
boy?
Us.
I don't know.
The EDH Social Contract Podcast.
So, okay, so. Paper. Listen, I'm all for it.
Are you on the toilet you're listening to this? Probably. If you are, then you need Cottonelle.
Statistically,
not sponsored by Cottonelle.
All of our listener, at least one of them.
All 100% of our listener.
All of our listener, which is Brandon, as we've established. So Brandon, when you hear this back, just make sure that you've had some coffee, and hopefully timing works out.
I mean, that's where I've been recording, guys. It just happens to be the best.
It sounds like it'd be the worst place. It's like, probably really echoey.
I mean, listen, you can do a lot of things with a Yeti mic. Creative process, being ready to just enact the actual process when you, inspiration strikes, or whenever you find the motivation to, or what, you know, just having that process to immediately start.
Yes, thank you, Mike.
And tying that into, yeah, sorry, I was going to say, hold on. I've gone down the rabbit hole as well. What? Here it is. Yes. Yes.
So I had a couple ideas when I went into this, but I mostly leave it open to whatever comes to mind. Like I started doing these every other week, and then I started doing it once a month, which gives me a little more time to like find the things I really want to do. But one I had early on, the second article was on the Song of All, which is flavor text that is basically like the Sarah creation myth in Magic's cards. It's like obviously fictional. It's not. It's from within the game, but it was like told via cantos or verses.
I have seen those where they like reference, you know, books and verses of scripture that, as far as I'm aware, does not exist.
No, it's all like the religion of Sarah, the benevolent, like in Don Dominaria. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, let's see all of these cards that we have, and then and like the creativity is part of the article. It's not just like I built this deck. Let's look at the deck. I want to walk through the process of building a deck. Usually what I do is I go and I, for that example, that's a really simple one. I go and I look. Here are all the cards that have the Song of All on in the flavor text, and you know maybe there's 16 cards. Great, these 8 or 9 work really well together. That's kind of our basis. That's the foundation. Let's build the deck that works to that point, and if we can fit in the rest of them as well, even if it's not perfectly efficient, we'll do it in there for the flavor, and then try to make it into a deck that won't feel awful to play. Because there's the thematic ones, and then that doesn't always carry over. Like I built a Rebecca Gay commander deck where literally every card was illustrated by Rebecca Gay, my favorite Magic artist. The deck played awful because they gave Rebecca Gay a lot of
you know, morally questionable.
Questionable.
Can we swear on here?
If here's it's the about thing. Bigots, then yes. I'm at the point now where. At this point, I basically put everything as explicit anyway, just because that way we're not going to get tagged for being explicit
accidentally.
We didn't say we were explicit. So yeah, go for it. Everybody, beware. There's going to be a swear.
Yes. I was saying she's one of the few that so far doesn't suck shit.
There you go. He said suck. Oh, no.
That was but the deck didn't play well. I mean, it's the potty mouth. I'm in the potty room. That's all.
This is the only time it's allowed.
Yes. Well, hold on. Sherman's coming in here with a pretty good offer. Let's see if they
season 2. We will listen.
But it didn't play well because they used to give her like dinky little draft shaft creatures, and like there were two commanders. I had mono white or green white as my commander, and she hasn't done Magic that much in the last 10-15 years. When the power creeped in, so the deck played awfully. So I played it like once or twice, and I was like, I love having this. It was fun to build. It's fun to look at, but I'm not doing anything with it. So that's the last step of this, is after I figure out like the inspiration, I get the idea for it, do some research, and that then discovering will lead me to the deck itself, what the deck wants to be, how it and the people making Magic often do a very, very good job. And it's something that's really hard to nail down, but if you look closely, like they do a really good job of kind of mirroring the vibe of what's happening in the card or the flavor text to what the card does and the feeling of it. We can say about, you know, Wizards' miscues, like successes and failures over the years, like the people designing the cards are just killing it. I think they're doing an excellent job. So to go back that's where it goes. Like it's then making it playable after have the idea, figure out what cards meet the criteria, and then you have a foundation you can build on. And then I go, yeah, every now and then I'll have an idea. When Louise Glick died, the Nobel Prize winning poet of the Wild Iris and some other Averno and some other, my favorite poet, definitely the most influential for me, in my poetry. She passed away in December, I think. No, I think it was November, because I published in December. Or it could have been October. This past fall, she died, and I built a deck that I was like, okay, I'm going to take my favorite poem of hers, and I'm going to depict it line by line in Magic cards. And that was the foundation that then we built it off of. And naturally, certain artists and certain mechanics kind of floated to the top there, and then we built it based on that.
Yeah, it's very cool that you've been able to, like, in a couple of different ways where, oh, I want to build the, you know, the reason essentially that we're like, hey, let's have Brandon on here. There's this cool mini game deck with the Sphinxes and the riddles, and also like something truly touching as like, oh, well, this poet meant a lot to me, and they recently passed. And then you've got dopes like me that are like, ooh, it's a deck where all of the cards are really tasty. I like that. You know,
that's fun though.
The idea. Yeah, exactly. The concept of like, hey, here are the 30,000 almost cards that exist with all of these cool things, and we're going to be able to make decks that are based off of, you know, Edgar Allan Poe quotes. Like, it's a really cool concept and way to look at the game as a deck building way. And I get what you're saying, where it's like, well, okay, this deck doesn't really function very well. It's all draft chaff and such. But, like, is there a deck idea? Is there a flavor of the month that you're like, I want to make this. There's no way it's possible. That, like, you could be here for like another 40 sets and there's no chance.
No way I could design it properly, you mean? Like, I should build the deck or just leave it up?
Kinda. Yeah, I'll leave that to your interpretation. I'm just kind of curious.
Has there ever been a theme? You're designing top down. You ever come up with a top down theme and the cards just are not there at all?
Well, let me open my, I have a little note on my notes app here. I have all my ideas. let me look at what's been sitting there for a while.
We just scroll 45 times. Like, oh, Brandon's going to be writing this article out. Until, yeah, just until the year 3000, Brandon is gonna, he's got ideas. We got this.
I mean, so far there hasn't been one that like I've like tried to do and it didn't work out. Like, there were a couple things. I think it was the Theriad that I tried to do. That's like basically Theros's, like kind of like the Iliad or the Odyssey.
It's their the Iliad version of it. Theros. Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I'll build a deck around that, and because I know that it's on a bunch of cards. I looked them up, and almost exclusively they're on vanilla creatures. And even if you then like pick the ones in the color, because there's like two like vanilla creature commanders in like green and white.
Petroglyphs.
That's not an interesting deck.
Gotcha.
What'd you say,
it's like Miranda Petroglyphs, the vanilla card.
Oh yeah, there's that one. There's I can't remember, but there's a couple. There's one in like Dominaria United, I think, that your vanilla creatures get like +2/+2 or something. I don't know, but I don't think it. But I realized that wouldn't lead itself anywhere. Like,
okay,
I could do the Odyssey. Odyssey would be a lot.
There's a lot of material there.
More interesting. Yeah, and then kind of like I did with the Shakespeare one, I took Midsummer's Dream and then just like kind of cast the characters based on cards and then find out how they work together. So the Theria, there's not much there. I have a great ideas. Like, I literally just have the words Ramen App Ruins. Like ramen? Like mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm doing with that. It's just sitting there. I don't know. Is that something I can do?
What is this? Is this a thing? This could be a thing, right?
Yeah, well, and it works with the other idea I have right next to it, the title of Hot Potato, just some card with a timer that goes around. You don't want to be the one carrying it. I'm sure there are some cards like that.
For sure.
Bronze Bombshell comes to mind, and I used her in the deck that I built a deck with as many, every single you lose the game clause I could find in it. So it was like, how close can you get to losing without actually losing? So that's probably the closest thing. I've probably already kind of done that, but so far there hasn't been something that, like, besides maybe the Theriad, that I got in there and was like, this won't work. Sometimes it's just different than how I planned it, and that's fine. Like, gotcha. I think that's, for example, the Love Song of Night and Day, that's another, flavor text, like kind of like the Song of All. It's referenced on a bunch of old cards. They put in a couple recent ones, and I was like, oh, I'm going to use that for a deck. They even made a card of it in Dominaria United, a saga. that represented this love song of Night and Day. That's the name of the card. And I was like, oh, cool. I'll build this and we'll see where it goes. And it ended up being like a cat typal deck because a lot of the cards, you know, especially when you're pulling old cards, that their power level is not always there. But the ones that were there kind of lent themselves. There were a lot of cats and a lot of, like, you know, green stuff. So, you know, lands and cats. And I tried to – it's more interesting than than I'm making it sound here. But kind of these articles are written and you know, I not to just talk about my articles all the time. Hopefully people will read them. But, like, the process of building them is, to me, more important than how they come out and how they play. I would,
for sure.
I want them to be playable and fun to play, but, like, that process of finding is important. And I think Magic is such an amazing game because we engage with it different than any other entertainment property. I mean, definitely in the category of card games, there's definitely some overlap here, but, like, you know, you think about other art, like, you think about movies. How do you engage with a movie? Well, maybe you talk about it with friends, maybe you write an essay about it or something, but you generally, the process of interacting with it is you watching it, and it's kind of one dimension. It's just in one direction. With Magic, there's, you express yourself, you build creatively, you choose how you engage with it, you choose these mechanics, as you pointed out, almost, asterisk, 30,000 cards, and there's a million ways to, like, with that much raw material. It seems, even though the irony is I love an efficient deck and I like to win, it's so, like, I get so much more out of building something creative and unique that no one else has built before. People have probably built, you know, one of my best decks is God Eternal Oketra. It wins, you know, a good percent of the time. It's just a bunch of good white creatures that come with 4/4s. Like, it's very good. I'm sure people have done it in almost the same way. It's not breaking any, like, it's fun to play, but it's not
breaking,
creatively, like, satisfying.
It's
I scarcely build decks. So even, I try to make every deck the deck that nobody's ever made before, and because of that I barely ever build decks.
It is hard, and I mean, this article series is kind of my excuse to do that. It's that ability to do that giving me the time to have these, you know, just chase these whims. I built a whole deck based on a pun, strictly butter. That term came into my head. I'm like, oh, there's a deck. So I built a deck, a crab deck. And that's,
I'm very happy with it. It's very cool. And leave it to the poet to be able to wax poetically on the idea of, like, Magic is this game that, and I mean that, like, Magic is this game where, yes, there's a lot of, like, the literal social interaction is there. You have the ability to play a very hyper competitive game if you want. You also have the ability to be very creative and express yourself and express an idea, whether you're talking about the, I'm just going to just go with tens of thousands of cards from this point, or even just reskinning them and just doing a different kind of concept of things that are prevalent in the cards or maybe not, or recasting characters to something like you were mentioning before. It's really cool that all of these options exist. And you know, you serve as somebody that is an example of literally both sides, or, you know, the polar opposite sides, as I think a lot of people would agree, of being able to make a deck where it's like, oh, this is me building a deck based off of a pun. This is me building my mono white Oketra deck to just, you know, stomp people. It's cool that all of that exists. And I think a lot of the reason that it was really enjoyable to be able to talk to you about this is because those concepts can live in the same person. And more importantly, they can live in the same table for our purposes here. So I think we both greatly appreciate that.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, like, I agree 100%. I think it's a beautiful part of this game that it can exist together. Like, yeah, maybe you'll have a conversation about what decks you're playing beforehand. Maybe the high concept deck. I don't know when this goes out, but my next article coming out from Mercurius Herald is a deck that cannot cast its commander. It's physically impossible. Ooh. So maybe that won't go against, you know, someone.
Is it that one Kalia deck? Black Legend that can't only be cast from the graveyard?
No, I did build phage before.
Oh yeah, phage is.
Or you
can remand phage to hand. Yeah. But
yes, but no, it's I mean, well, I'll tell a bit.
Oh, it's here. No,
yeah, no, here's what we'll do. No, Brandon, spill nothing. Nothing. Here's what we do. We're 80 episodes plus into this now. I finally figured out how to do it. Brandon, that sounds like a really cool idea. Before you go, tell everybody again where they'd be able to find you to be able to look at all of these other decks that you've made. Hey, we did it! All these other decks, and what your next deck is, which sounds really interesting, and I'd sure hate to be somebody who didn't get to read that article.
It's at Commander's Herald, which is another EDH's sibling site, I guess you could say. And, you know, we split the set reviews between Commander's Herald and EDH Rec, but that's where all my articles are for Flavor of the Month. And
perfect.
Yeah. But the last thing I'll say there, too, is kind of where I was going with the creative part. Like, yes, you can do this creative stuff, but like, it's not just how you build the deck; it's how you play it. The choices you make as you play, kind of as you were saying, like you don't want to just have one with your Revel and Riches, because you want to see, or you want that player that was like, I'm gonna win with something really cool. Like if this deck wins, so you let them go, and that's you know, creativity is about taking those opportunities for something unusual or unique, and you were remaining open to that. Sure, ended up in just like, oh, Lab Man. But who knows? Maybe there was some weird, bizarre combo that Commander Spellbook hasn't even put together yet.
That's impossible. No, that's very possible.
I can't keep track.
There's 30,000 cards. Dang it, I did it again. There's tens of thousands of cards.
For every card in EDH recently.
That's fantastic.
Wow. Not that we have one card for every combo, but we have a number of combos.
Right.
Yeah, and only half of them are Ashnod's Altar or Basalt Monolith.
Only half of them are Intruder Alarm or Retreat to Coral Helm.
Intruder. Yeah, one of those.
It's definitely weighted. But even to the point of, the card printings you choose, like, who doesn't love, like, matching their basics? Like a basics that go with their deck, maybe. I should say not everyone does.
Or very specifically, I've got a deck where I recently took all the basics out, and I made sure that I had no two basics that were alike. It's just like, no, there's each one of my lands is unique, even if they say the same thing. They're different.
I've been collecting mountains from at least one from every set, like all the new variants, like because there's like a special type of basic in every pack now.
Yeah.
But down back to like old... You know, old border and white border and unglued, unhinged.
Got the full text, the no text.
Yep, full text. So I'm gonna put it in a mono red deck at some point and be like, yeah, here's 32 different mountains.
Very cool.
That's fun too.
I like.
Yeah,
that.
But there's a million ways to express yourself, and deck building is one of them. And you know, I just enjoy the sense of play that you can have even while playing a game. Like it's a layer to that is very satisfying to me. So I love sharing this stuff, and hopefully some folks will be inspired to try this type of stuff out on their own.
Yeah. Well, it was a pleasure having you. And I hope we get to talk to you or play a game in the future. Whether it's one of these decks, completely different one, or you just stomp us with Oketra. I'm all for it. Alex, for example, somebody was to say, if I wanted to have a commander that was actually impossible to cast from the command zone, how are some different ways that I would go about that? Or any other kind of judges' questions or combos that might exist. How would they find you?
Well, they can find me on Twitter at Lappermedic, LAPPERMEDIC. I also have my link tree. It's at lapper.gay, lapper.gay. I have the Commander Spellbook, which we talked about today. We're the search engine for EDH combos. And, well, you put it best, Brandon, is that this is a very creative game. And maybe the best part of this game is that you can force your creativity on others by designing a creative deck and making them play against it. And in that vein, as a parting gift, I do have a card that perhaps you did consider for your deck that I think is right on theme with Sphinx decks, but we don't really see it in there. So if you'll indulge me, the card I'm recommending for you is Liar's Pendulum. which is a single generic mana for an artifact. You pay 2 and tap, name a card. Target opponent guesses whether a card with that name is in your hand. You may reveal your hand. If you do and your opponent guessed wrong, draw a card. This card is printed once in Mirrodin. It's never been printed again. That's 43 cents. To me, this is the Sphinx card that can go in any deck, especially your silly mini there you game go. Deck. So perhaps you saw that one, perhaps you didn't. That's my forced creativity on you.
No, I think it's great. And I mean, I don't know if it's forcing is the right term for creativity, but I'm like exposing people to it.
Whether they want it or not.
I can do this. There isn't just one way to play this. But no, Liar's Pendulum is awesome. And actually, so as we mentioned, there's tens of thousands of cards.
Really?
This one escaped my eyes. Just the searches I use, like, you know, Scryfall, like all the different terms I use. This one never came up because I didn't search for these specific words. Maybe I should have put the word guess. That probably would have been going to find some stuff. But someone pointed this out to me. I was like, that would have been perfect in here. But you're right. This is a one generic mana and it costs like nothing. This would be great to just throw in some decks, especially, I guess, if your deck has a hard time, if you're in a color that can't draw very well, maybe in red or white.
Even for those colors, this is not very efficient. But if you're doing a guessing game / Sphinx / Riddle deck and you just need some extra draw in there, this is perfect.
But I'm saying, even if you're not doing that type of deck, this might be a fun way to do it.
Yeah. It's at the very least a good thing to introduce into the mini game of the mini game of the game.
Yes.
Yeah, I dig it. Well, hey, everyone. I hope you had a good time listening. We appreciate you. Make sure that you check out all of Brandon's articles on the Commander's Herald, as well as a whole bunch of other stuff on the Commander's Herald, because it's awesome, and we like it, and we like all of you. Until next time.
Well, shout out to our Discord and our patrons. Thank you so much for holding us down. We appreciate you, and we'll see you real soon.
Mike, Alex, thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, Brandon. Appreciate it.
Woo!